From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Robbie Feinberg with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, June 20th, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
Maine Superior Court Justice Julia Lippez defended her sentencing record at a hearing before the U.S. Senate's Judiciary Committee on Thursday. A former federal prosecutor, Lippez was nominated by President Joe Biden last month to serve on the First Circuit Court of Appeals. At Thursday's hearing, Maine Senator Angus King said he'd, quote, never seen a stronger candidate for a judicial position. But several Republicans were critical of Lippez for handing down what they characterized as light sentences in cases related to sexual abuse of a minor and the death of an infant. Lippez defended her record and noted that she had support from the Maine Coalition to End Domestic Violence and the Maine Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
I believe that support is a reflection of the work I did as a prosecutor, as well as the care I take with cases involving victims as a judge.
If approved, Lippez would replace Judge William Kayada, who's retiring from active status. The Maine Department of Transportation is meeting on Thursday night with residents of Islesboro. It's the latest in a series of public sessions designed to let island commuters sound off about problems with the state's ferry service. Caitlin Badayan has more.
As staffing issues have affected ferry operations at multiple locations, the Maine DOT has been meeting with island residents to focus on their biggest concerns. Riders like Caroline Bigelow say the demand for the ferry spikes in the summer months, and delays and cancellations only worsen the crowding. She's from Concord, Massachusetts, but has a house on Islesboro that she stays at periodically throughout the year.
Everything's grown. It's busier. There's a lot of construction on the island, a lot of trucks. And when the ferry goes down, it affects everyone. And forget it, if you work on the mainland and live over there year-round, how do you, you know, do that commute?
The union representing ferry workers says the state has failed to keep wages competitive, which has led to short staffing. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Badayan.
Greater Portland Landmarks has filed a civil complaint against the City of Portland, alleging the reclassification of the former Children's Museum building within the Congress Street Historic District was illegal. Carol Bousquet has more.
In its complaint, Greater Portland Landmarks alleges that city councilors failed to consider historic preservation land use standards, such as the architectural significance of 142 Free Street, when it voted in May to declassify the building as non-contributing. The Portland Museum of Art had sought the change in order to tear the structure down as part of a major expansion project. Greater Portland Landmarks Board of Trustees Vice President Carol DeTine hopes the legal challenge will lead to negotiations.
We remain hopeful that discussions will be welcomed by the PMA. We're confident that together we can find a win-win solution. That is what the Greater Portland community is asking of us.
Portland Museum of Art Director Mark Basir said in a statement that, quote, this appeal questions the judgment of our elected officials and will impose a significant financial and human resource burden on the city of Portland. Greater Portland Landmarks wants the Superior Court to vacate the order and remand the matter back to the City Council. The City of Portland declined to comment. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Carol Bousquet.
Portland-based Running Tide Technologies, hailed as a trailblazer in the growing carbon capture industry, closed its doors last week. The company's vision of storing atmospheric carbon dioxide deep in the ocean attracted national media attention and tens of millions of dollars from initial investors. But as Peter McGuire reports, the money dried up as the company came under scrutiny.
Back in March, Running Tide Technologies was riding a wave of success. After years of glowing coverage from CNN, The New York Times, and other outlets, it announced it had locked 21,000 tons of carbon dioxide in the ocean off the coast of Iceland. The company delivered thousands of carbon offset credits to customers like Microsoft and Shopify that were eager to show reductions in their greenhouse gas emissions. Since opening 7 years ago, it brought in $50 million in startup investments. But just months later, Running Tide suspended operations and laid off its remaining staff. Founder and CEO Marty Odlin points to changes in the credit market, interest rates, and other factors that made it tough to keep investors interested.
We raised money, set out a plan, executed on that plan, then went to go raise more money, right, to execute the next set of plans, and we weren't able to do that. And so you have to wind down.
The company Odlin started in 2017 had ambitious plans to fight climate change. It would absorb atmospheric carbon through kelp and floating algae microfarms, trapping the planet warming gas underwater when the farm sank. Customers would buy the emissions offsets. It was a brand new idea, Odlin says. And as a startup, long-term success was never guaranteed.
We made it pretty far. We did a lot further than I kind of expected.
And Running Tide had its critics. Scientists interviewed by the MIT Technology Review 2 years ago questioned whether the company understood the potential ecological harm of growing and sinking kelp at the huge scale it imagined. And just days before Running Tide closed, Icelandic newspaper Heimildin published a searing 3-month investigation into its project there, raising questions about its importation of thousands of tons of Canadian wood chips coated with limestone that it dumped into the ocean. Bjartmar Alexanderson, one of the reporters of the piece, says scientists dismissed the company's claim that its process would remove thousands of tons of carbon from the atmosphere.
This claim was not scientifically proven by their company. And I mean, you can say a lot of things, but you have to scientifically prove it.
Odlin declined to comment on the investigative piece, but says the company had always planned to sink biomass such as wood chips. He says the Icelandic operation was the first of 4 planned phases and carried out with scientific integrity. Brad Ack, CEO of nonprofit Ocean Visions, says that Running Tide was a leader in ocean-based carbon capture, and among a dozen companies he works with that have been testing the effectiveness of trapping carbon in the ocean. In a perfect world, Ack says, the effort would be supported with a massive government research and development program.
That's not how this field has developed. It's been developed by visionary people in the private sector who also have to try to operate a business.
Ack says he was saddened to learn Running Tide was shuttered, but hopes that all the company's work can guide future research. And that seems likely. Odlin says the 100 or so employees Running Tide had at its peak are ready to carry on its mission, and that at least 3 new companies have already been started by former workers. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
The Portland Sea Dogs honored victims of the Lewiston mass shootings Wednesday night by holding a deaf and hard of hearing awareness night. 4 of the 18 people who were killed last October were deaf. And as Nick Song reports, the Sea Dogs are helping to raise money for a summer camp for deaf children.
Instead of their usual uniforms, the Sea Dogs wore specially designed jerseys with the name in American Sign Language displayed on the front. Later this week, the jerseys will be auctioned off online. A Sea Dog spokesperson says the auction is expected to raise more than $5,000. All of the proceeds will go to the Deer Go Experience, a summer camp in Maine specifically for deaf and hard of hearing children. Don Willard Robinson is Camp Deer Go's director.
Inclusion and providing support for people to access things is really the biggest benefit for the children that we work with.
Camp Deer Go was founded 3 years ago by the Pine Tree Society's director for interpreting services, Josh Seal, who was killed during the Lewiston shootings. Seal's 13-year-old son, Jason, who was also deaf, threw out the first pitch of the game. The Sea Dogs ultimately lost 18-4 to the Richmond Flying Squirrels. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nick Song.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock on Friday morning, journalist Susan Page will discuss her book chronicling the life of legendary journalist Barbara Walters. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Thank you for listening.